Bar or Boulware?
It's Boulware.
Boulware.
But I've had to pronounce it so many times. And usually I have to say Boulware. But I mean, it is Boulware.
Let me get an introduction of this. This is Frank T. Hilton, the interview in Ford P. Boulware.
Yeah.
Ford M. Boulware.
Oh.
Here on November the 29th, 1988, in his home. You were a very active scout, from all that I've been able to read. What can you tell me about scouting?
Well, we were very active then. I'm not sure we weren't more active then than ever before. But I'm not so familiar with scouting right now. Well, my son was in the scouts, and they went to camps and all. It seems to me we were much more dedicated. I can start off, I can give you my experience, more or less. Our executive is named Bryce Draper. And he was really an excellent executive. Everybody more or less idolized him. He wasn't just a leader, he was. Everybody was idolized him. Something like an army officer.
How old was Bryce Draper?
Bryce was something around 28, maybe. But my first experience, I think an executive came down here from Lubbock with two or three of his Boy Scouts when I was 12 years old, just getting into scouting. And our scouts were, the origin of our scout movement, I think, were the church. In other words, the Presbyterian Church had Troop 3. The Christian Church, I think, had Troop 7. So I think the Episcopal Church and the Presbyterian, we had 7 troops. But the churches were the ones that sponsored them and got them started. Because as you recall, very few of the old ranching families' sons were scouts. Possibly because they went to church in Ozona, so I don't know. And I think that's the way it started. Anyway, To whip up some enthusiasm, this fellow from Lubbock came down with his prime, I guess they were eager scouts. They put on a fire-making exhibition where you not only struck flints and made fire, but you also had a
fire by friction
spindle going into another block. You made fire by friction. That impressed the hell out of me. Well, anyway, that was our first experience. Then each troop had a scoutmaster. Troop 3 had, his name was Bell, Frank Bell. He was a city engineer. And so we broke into scouting, and we all went to a store here called Bacon Hemp Hills. That was the forerunner of Hemp Hill Wells. And we got our uniforms, and that was a great. We were just 12 years old. Then we were exposed to all the different things, the scouting, the laws, and the oath. Let's see, tenderfoot badge, that was fairly automatic, but it was quite a thrill. We were in the second class. In the first class, when we got a first class badge, that's like, say, becoming an officer in the Army. I mean, great excitement. Then from there you went on to, what was it, Star Scout and Live Scout and Eagle, and with the corresponding merit badges you had to get. And each one was good, but it never matched the thrill, I don't think, of getting that first class. Well, quite a few of us, we made a competitive thing, but we got the most merit badges. And I remember, I don't know, I had around 16. My cousin Dwight Jr. had around there. Who else were?
You and Willard Dwight,
Crotty, I think.
Willard Crotty were all, seemed like the...
We all had around 60 merit badges. In other words, the badges went not only in front, but all the way down our back.
Who did you pass these merit badges to? Who did you pass the merit badges to? Who passed you on the merit badges?
Oh, the different experts in town. In other words, first aid would be some doctor in town. And the photography would be some local photographer. I forgot how we had what kind of engineering thing, but it would be near the city engineer or surveyor.
I noticed y'all had a lot of your activities usually either at the fire station or the co-operative places in town.
Well, it was. Now, the fire station, you see, was right across from the courthouse. We had, once a year, I don't know if they ever called it a jamboree or whatever. Lots of contests, mainly, say, an archery. And very good bows. Neil Sanders made them.
He showed me a bow that he had made.
Well, he made them so strong that we, let's see, 50 yards, those arrows would go practically on a level line. Not up and down, but that's great.
Made the arrows too, I understand.
Made the arrows, and you know, I forgot what kind of feathers we used, and then we had copper points. But, hey, that's a deadly thing. Then we had bugling contests, not tying and so on.
Tell me about your bugling. I saw where they kidded you a lot of times about your bugling because you bugled at Camp Pioneer. I think you were the bugler for that camp.
I was a bugler.
And,
well, I played the trumpet, you see.
In school?
In school, too. One year I played the trumpet, I don't know. But I was the bugler. And another fellow named Clovis Rogers was also a very good bugler.
There was a kid later on by the name of Bill Irwin who became the
He was very good. He also played the trumpet. But he was
younger than you were, I'm
about 2 or 3 years younger.
Bobby Gilly Pfluger's age.
I guess so. I don't know. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Well, anyway, these camps, they were all of the camps that I ever went to were out in Crystal. And it was all very professional. We had to set up our camps and had to set them up very neatly, just like you would in the army. You had the whitewash, the rocks around the tents, and you had the ropes just right.
Do you remember where that camp was in Christopher?
Yeah, it was right on the south shore of the river, not far from the main highway.
Is it right across from the Baptist encampment that used to be on the north side of that river?
Probably. Have you seen the buildings out there?
Yes, I've been out there.
Well, you've seen two or three stone buildings just about a quarter of a mile from the bridge. The first buildings, really, you see. About a quarter of a mile, 200 or 300 yards from the bridge. And on the south side, that's where we had all of our tents. And then the swimming hole was right there. And we had a good springboard. So about 8 feet above water, very deep water. And we'd have a water polo team.
J.T. Henderson was telling me that y'all would play water polo, and you and Dwight would pull his pants down to his knees so he couldn't swim and he couldn't win the game.
I don't remember that. Good day. Anyway, that was one of the things. Anyway, I forgot all we did. We still had all the contests, you see. But on the north side, that's where we had the mess hall.
Was it a pavilion type mess hall?
Well, no, I think it's a great big canvas.
Roof type?
It wasn't a permanent building. And that's where, that was the mess hall. That's where we were first exposed to. They tried to palm off oleo on us. You see, here this, we thought it was butter. I mean, they had color, it was a coloring matter you could mix in with it. And my God, it was this horrible flavor. They probably wouldn't know it.
I was reading on one of the camps that for breakfast they usually had toast and cereal and prunes. And for lunch it was usually all vegetables, no meat. Do you remember that? And then supper they usually had a meat dish.
No. I really don't remember the food too, except I do remember, and that's not my taste. I mean, I can't eat that large of anything. I hate it.
Even today?
Even today. And the cook. that scope. Well, he had the big construction. Reese Albert.
Reese Albert was cooked.
He died last year.
That's what I understand.
But you know, he had this still, it's a huge construction. Well, he was our camp cook. He cooked for us.
Was Albert, his brother Harold, was he active in
scouting? Not that I remember. But Reese cooked for us. Christoval camp, and then once or twice we went down to a camp we had in Menard.
Camp Kickapoo.
I guess that was it.
It was on the east side of Menard, about 10 miles.
Right, on the river there.
Right.
And that had a great big swing. You could swing out over the river and everything. And Herbert Mears, it was Herbert Mears' ranch. And that was a great camp, too. But the main thing was scouting for us. Now, let's see, we did it for about 2 or 3 years.
How big was San Angelo then?
Oh, maybe 20,000. Let's see.
You were
1925 when I got in. And in 1925, Angelo, I looked out that it was over 15,000. And obviously, we had 7 troops, but not all the troops were full.
But like there are today, some are real active and some aren't so active.
I don't know. If you look at the number of scouts total, I believe. Oh, let's see. I doubt if we had 100 active, really. But
I got the impression it was a close-knit group.
Well, it was close-knit. And in other words, that was our whole life for about 2 or 3 years. It superseded anything else. We had a lot of fun.
What are some of the funny things you remember, the pleasant things you remember as a scout?
Oh, I suppose I love to dive. I had a great, had a lot of fun doing all the diving and swimming, and Bryce Drager was an excellent instructor. In other words, a lot of us became instructors ourselves in a life saving. Got to wear these various medals. I mean, the insignia on there.
Oh, yeah, lifeguard.
Yeah, it's American Red Cross. It's a regular American Red Cross instruction thing. We went through, so we had quite a few of us became not only lifeguards but instructors too. And this was while we were scouts. We weren't over 14 years old, I guess. So we would go down to Paradise and so on. As Boy Scouts, go swimming there. Some reason we went down there too, as Boy Scout. That was a lot of fun. Then we had this exposition troop, which you probably heard about.
Yes, what can you tell me about it? I remember you blew the bugle on it.
Yeah, they made the troop up to 4 patrols, and they drew them from all the scouts. So we had 4 patrols, and I suppose we had something like 20, 25. Boys, and we went around to all the villages around here, so Ozona and El Dorado, and all the small towns and the theaters, and then we would put on our show up on the stage. All the local townspeople used to come and see.
Y'all had a pretty good turnout of crowds.
Yeah, we did.
I meant that was quite something excited in those days for people to come out and see. It was...
Well, I think so. And we became just veteran stage performers.
What was your job in the troop? What did you...
Well, let's see, I've forgotten what I think I was in the signal. We had 4 things, as I recall. We had a knot tying. That would be one of the 4 exhibitions we put on stage. The other was making fire. And the other was first aid. And I forgot the other.
Signaling was the 4th one.
Signaling.
That would have been the 4, I think.
Yeah. And signaling, when we go back in the rear of the audience, and we do our flags or our Morse code. And that That was a lot of fun, traveling that way.
Did Bryce Draper go with y'all?
Oh, Bryce was the one that
put it together.
Did all this stuff.
Do you remember anything unusual happening on these trips? There was an article in the paper going from Junction to Sonora that there was a car had overturned and was burning, and the scouts put the fire out with sand, and the lady.
I don't remember that.
That was on the front page. And then J.T. Henderson said he remembers all the flat tires they had going to Fort Stockton. He said they had 26 flats going to Fort Stockton.
Oh, I know, we never went to Fort Stockton.
You didn't go with the group. There were two different times they went. One went to the eastern towns, like Old Braun and what's the Indian riding place east of town here? Paint Rock. And Rowena and Menard and Eden, Junction, Sonora, El Dorado.
Yeah.
That was one group. Then another group went to Ozona and Caney and Fort Stockton and Big Lake and that area.
I remember Ozona. I don't remember going to Fort Stockton and Caney.
They got flooded out in their campsite at Fort Stockton. They camped in the spring.
Yeah.
You may have gone a different year because they went.
Well, it must have gone a different year because there was only one expedition troop. We had Orange and that consisted of the black boys. That was the expedition troop.
Did y'all wear the broadband hats then?
Yeah. Wore those. Didn't we ever not? I don't remember.
That was part of the uniform then, wasn't it?
Yeah. I don't remember when you and I didn't wear those.
You and Dwight Hunter were real close because you were cousins.
Yeah.
Were you all in the same troop together? I know both of y'all at one time or another were scribes to the troop.
Yeah, yes, we were in the same troop, Troop 3. Sure. See, we were Episcopal Church, and we joined the Presbyterian Church. So, yeah, we were in the same troop.
What are some things y'all did together in scouting?
Oh, mainly we were tied up with the merit band stuff. If we weren't on the summer camps, we were doing everything we could to get these men merit band. Actually, it was a lot of fun getting them.
Which one did you enjoy doing the most that you remember back on?
About the merit band system? Oh, I don't know. Think of any particular merit badge that was had any outstanding excellence.
What can you
Oh, come on in, Mary, I have some coffee.
One of the things I wanted to ask you was about the Knights of Zocca, because you were one of the first members, apparently.
Yes, they formed this thing. It's like a be like a boys' fraternity club, you know, in any other school. And, well, we enjoyed scouting so much that and we were getting too old. So Draper, I guess it was his brainchild, to continue on, but something like this, keep the same group together, but as a continuing relationship, Zocca. And I don't remember what Zocca stood for.
I was hoping you would, because I can't find it anywhere.
You must have had something in mind for Zocca. I don't remember.
Y'all had an initiation. Do you remember anything about that?
Had an initiation. Oh, it was like any... I think you'd be blindfolded and taken out of the car, and they'd walk home or something. I mean, just some...
silly thing.
Yeah.
They used to have a banquet every month, or get together once a month, and it kept referring to, remember the banquet on the first Thursday of every month, or something like that.
I can't remember too much about the Zocas. I do remember we got the thing going. And every so often we may have had a meeting, but there's nothing really to... It wasn't like scouting. There was nothing
just
there.
Just a social group,
it was
wasn't
just
it?
Just a social group. And unfortunately, it didn't go over in high school because the scouts weren't the majority in high school at all. We were a pretty small group. When I say the church started it.
So it was for the junior high kids, middle school kids that were in
the... Well, when we were 12 years old, we were in the sixth grade. That would be junior high. We were all just starting junior high. And we were still in scouting, I guess, freshman high school. But the bulk of the people in high school weren't scouts. They were they were what you would call in the fast lane in high school. They weren't scouts. I don't know why. A lot of them were the old ranching family's sons, but.
So your mother was postmaster here, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was.
What can you tell me about her? And where was the post office there?
The post office, you know, on Oaks, across from the old Cactus Hotel.
Where it is?
I think they call it the Federal Building. It's a very handsome building.
And that was post office then when she was post.
That was, she built it, yeah.
Oh, she did.
Well, she was postmistress. She built it. Well, she was a daughter. She was one of, let's see, seven daughters and one son from Millspaugh, who was my grandfather. He came down here from New York and he was the post commissioner, or whatever. Ran the big stores and all that. And he started all the waterworks here and so on. Anyway, he had seven daughters and one son. And she was one of them. And she married my father, who was Kentucky. He died when I was five. So she had to do something, so she finally became postmistress.
So you lived with your mother when you were growing up?
Yeah, I lived with her. And, she likes scouting. But I don't know, it was a great thing for us.
I got the feeling that the community leaders of that time, Parker, who was fire chief, and the mayor, and people of this nature were very much involved. Sam Crowther was involved in scouting with Crowther Hardware Store.
Well, let's see.
Russ.
Old John Y. Russ was the head of the whole thing. And whenever we had, were given our Boy Scout merit badges and so on, I forgot what to call this gathering. Court of Honor, right. He was there. He would give them out. And let's see, his son, Army Rush, was too old for scouting, but he would always play his trumpet. I mean, he would come out and play his trumpet. And he was the only one that we ever saw scouting. He was just a little bit too old.
He finally got his eagle bag. I have an article where he was presented his.
He must have been then when, but I don't really remember.
He got in scouted at 23.
He did?
Yes. He was with Garrett when he was
scouting. I don't remember. That's funny, because I don't remember any scouts in Angelo before we joined.
Well, scouting was inactive for 2 years prior to you joining.
Must have been.
It died out.
They were too
it died out in late 23 sometime.
Well, it took Draper.
What do you know? What can you tell me about Bryce Draper? I have nobody that can describe him to him. You tell him his personality or
Oh, Bryce?
Yes, I'd like to know something about him.
Well, he was our idol.
Well, his dad was minister of the First Methodist Church here.
I don't know anything about his family. He had a brother who was killed in a wreck, and he was sort of a ne'er-do-well. But Bryce Draper had outstanding personality. He had to, you see, to have all these Boy Scouts just revered. And, I'd say he was around in his probably late 20s, I guess.
Was he a fat man, thin man?
No, he was very, very handsome, very athletic, very handsome, hell of a good swimmer, so. Seemed that he could do everything. Play the trumpet.
Yeah, but he was in a band. It seems that scout camps, a lot of times they had bands.
All right. We all had to sing quite a bit, you know, mass, and he was he knew all those things. we thought of him as invincible. Then when we were through scouting and we saw Bryce, he was doing something. I saw him in civilian clothes and I was shocked. I mean, he came down to the world of mortars again.
Did he wear his uniform all the time?
Always, when he was our scouting sergeant. But when let's see, we were a little bit older, and I saw him downtown, and he was selling something, I don't know. Just ordinary normal business clothes, and just shocked the hell out of me. Here he is, just a mortgage, just like I was. But you know, he, very handsome.
He married the campfire girl
exactly.
Director.
I've forgotten her name. He married her. But when we were scouts, and he was the one that did everything. Our scoutmaster never did it. None of the scoutmasters did anything.
I got that impression that they were just sort of, were there, but they weren't.
They had to be there. There had to be a scoutmaster. But they never, they hardly ever participated in the damn thing. It was always Drake that did everything. See?
So he kept the thing together and kept it going.
Oh, hell yes. I mean, it was absolutely magnetic personality.
I noticed in those days they didn't have marksmanship, rifle shooting.
No.
I've never figured out why they didn't, unless it just, surely it was popular, but for some reason it wasn't included and counted.
Thank God they didn't. Nothing else. I don't know. They had everything else you could think of.
I remember reading where they introduced ping pong in one of the summer camps, and that was a novelty item then, to play ping pong.
That was after I got out of here. I used to love to play ping pong, but I never did as a scout.
When did you get out of scouting?
I must have been when I was around 14, I suppose.
In other words, you got your ego the first year you were in scouting, you and Dwight and Willard and all that group.
That quickly?
I noticed that you passed the board in the fall of, about November 26th, and then y'all received your eagle on February the 9th, 1927.
Well, you see, I got into scouting when I was 12, I'm sure, and that was in 25, so that must have been the second year.
And then y'all worked on merit badges, I assume, after that, because you were active for a couple of years after you, or at least a year after you got your eagle.
Yeah. Well, yes. As I say, that took up most of our time.
What do you remember about Camp Kickapoo with Menard?
Not much. Herbert Mears, he was the rancher, nice fellow. And we went down there twice, as I recall. The main thing, they had this awfully nice old swimming hole. And we camped. Well, I didn't send it there, and our mess hall was this big truck that Reese Albert had, and he converted it into a kitchen, the rear of it. And that was the mess hall, and that's I don't really remember much else. We had a good time.
It was a camp held the year before that. It was right after Geronimo. It was held out. They call it 7 mile crossing or 9 mile crossing. It's where Tankersley Road crossed Knickerbocker. J.T. Henderson said it was where the bridge is that goes across Lake Nashville now, going out toward the airport. Do you remember ever camping out in that area, Leedale Ranch or in that area?
St. Bill Lee was one of them. Somewhat younger, but he could have been a scout, but he never was. That's why I said it's funny. Your old ranching family. Well, my family's an old ranching family, but my father and mother weren't. But the ones who would have inherited ranch, he said. It's a funny thing. They weren't scouting.
Tell me about San Angelo. What was San Angelo like then?
Oh, San Angelo is a much better town than it is now. I mean, obviously, it was only say 15,000 people, but you still had, in proportion, a hell of a lot to a better class of people here.
Were all the streets brick streets then?
No. Chadburn was wood block, but covered with tar. But basically, it was wood block, and you had your trolley tracks running up and down Chadburn. And there were some. I guess there were some bricks that they set up.
Maybe they were just putting them in. A lot of the streets, I assume, were not paved after you got out of the downtown area.
No, that's true. Most of them are things like 8th Street. I mean, Bryant Boulevard. That was unpaved for quite a while. go collegiate.
How did y'all as kids get around?
Bicycles.
Bicycles were very popular then?
Yeah. Well, that's the only way we could go. Yes, I could drive my mother's car every so often. But I had a bicycle. I'd go to school on a bicycle. But sure, that's the only way. We didn't have any cars taking us to school or anything like that. You know, like that.
Well, you really weren't that far away, were you?
Well, let's see.
This was out, this addition out here that you live in now was just being built then.
It was. Well, I lived over here on A Street, Washington Drive. Well, I had to ride my bicycle over to junior high, which was way up on
Magdalen?
Yeah, Magdalen, which is across town. In other words, there was no car pickup stuff. Everybody, you either walked or you had a bicycle. I mean, basically, that's what it was. And then I think it got the thing where one family would pick up other students in their car and take them. Now you have buses. But,
there were no buses in those.
No, we didn't have any buses. It was a much better community than now. You didn't have half the crime. You didn't have the traffic.
Well, everybody knew everybody.
Everybody knew everybody, and it's much more pleasant place to live. This is much more pleasant, say, than San Antonio.
The kids that you ran around with, I imagine most of them were scouts that you ran around with, but what do you remember about
I went into the, let's see, elementary school here, called West Ward. It was over there on the next to the river on Beauregard. It was on the bank of the river.
Over there where the central fire station, the old central fire station is now in that area?
No, it was on practically next to Beauregard, and practically on the river, on the bridge, next to the bridge. Get off the bridge, and
there
back there was a school. And everything that way was wilderness, more or less. That was Mexican community across the river.
On the west side. On the west side.
Where the Central High School is now.
Okay, that was all the Mexican-American community.
And we would, when we were mean, we'd go down and fight them. The plain by the river.
Have a regular war.
Yeah. No grass around the school or anything, all pure collegiate. Well, that was the West Ward, and I went in the second grade. Because I'd been the first grade in California. I'd speeded up 1 year. I started early in California. I came back and got in the second grade. And the principal was Ella Jones. I remember this was Pete, the third grade. I had a fight. Taylor Cole was another scout. Great big fellow. And I was a great, I could drop kick the football beautifully then. I was just a little fellow, but I mean, that didn't matter. You could still kick the ball. But those were, and then you had four elementary schools, the West Ward, South Ward, which is Fort Conson, the East Ward, and North Ward. Then you had your junior high school, which would be the 6th and 7th. Then you had high school, 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th. No 12th.
Right, I had an 11th grade sister when I went to school.
Yeah. An old high school is probably where you go.
Was that the one that burned down?
Did it burn down?
Well, there's one built and burned down here a few years back, but I don't know whether that was the old high school or whether that was the old San Angelo College building.
Well, the high school was catty-cornered from the college. The college was here, and the high school was over here, catty-cornered.
Across the street.
Yeah, and the football field was right next to it. Across from the high school, and also across from the college. But they built the college after I was... No, the college was there when I was going to high school. I think they built it while I was going to high school.
What do you remember best about high school?
Best? I didn't like it. I don't know why. I just didn't particularly I didn't like it at all. As I look back on it, it's bad. I don't know why. Because, see, from high school, I went to New Mexico Military Institute for 2 years. And he had a completely different type of life, different study, different instructors.
Much more professional.
Different kind of system of living, everything else. And when I left high school, I weighed maybe 120 pounds, 125, a little bitty thing. And when I left New Mexico 2 years later, I was 180. So in other words, I matured there. Now, had I been mature in high school, maybe I wouldn't have liked it. I didn't like it. Then I went to MIT after that, and I was large enough, and I was on the crew. Great. Looking back at this high school, I'd say anybody that had to go through it, it's just tough. Well, they didn't, I don't know, the classes were good, the teachers were good. The atmosphere was not good. Like many times you had all the girls today, all you were thinking about after school and at night, what date would you have? And a lot of them would go over to Simmons Drugstore and they would just guzzle beer, stuff like that. It wasn't a healthy life to grow up to, from puberty on. It was very unhealthy.
In other words, we think it's bad today, and it really may not be any worse today anymore.
Well, it's much worse today, I think.
Well, y'all didn't have drugs then.
No.
You had alcohol.
But we would have been on had we had it. So that was the bootleg era. And that was the great thing, go out to some bootleggers out in Westmoreland edition. Go to some bootleggers' home, you'd sit around drinking home brew. And we had dances, say, at the country club. And you buy the, what they call, rot gut. Drink that stuff.
It was rot gut, all right.
Oh, God, it's horrible.
What did you do when you came back to San Angelo?
Here?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well,
you graduated from MIT?
Oh, then I went mining in Utah. I was mining Bingham Canyon underground mine.
As a miner or as an engineer?
I was a miner.
You were a miner.
I started out shoveling and drilling and blasting and then sinking shafts. And let's see, I was a shift boss when I left for the war in 1940. So I was in Europe for about, well, the whole war. I came back in 45. And I went back to the mine. Mining game again. I was the underground foreman, general foreman. And let's see, I was going to be superintendent of the mine, but then I married Edie. And
where did you meet her?
Oh, I'd known her forever. She was here when she was intermittently. She went to school in Europe all the time, but she would come back to the ranch in the summers, a hell of a lot. And I learned to swim out at the ranch when I was seven. So I've known her all my life. But she went to school in Europe mainly and then to New York. She went to Smith. And I would see her in New York every so often. Anyway, I married her back in 47. And we stayed up there for a couple of years. And then we had a chance. Lee Allwell was leasing the ranch. His lease was running out. He had leased it for 20-some odd years. So when his lease ran out, he had the choice. He was coming, running ranch, or me being a superintendent of this mine. And everything pointed to be much better life down here. He's been tied up. Mine is great if you're single, but when you're married, it loses some of its glamour.
I can imagine that. You enjoy being a rancher? Have you enjoyed being around?
Oh, that is great.
What did you ranch? What animals or things did you?
Oh, cattle.
Y'all cattle ranchers.
Cattle and sheep, but I quit sheep maybe 20 years ago. They were losing money then, and they're making more money now, but takes so much labor to hand a sheep. You have to do all kinds of things constantly with sheep. You don't have cattle.
What kind of cattle do you...
Well, they're Angus.
Angus cattle?
Angus cattle, and I... Well, then I put Hereford bulls on them and use the offspring heifers as mother cows, and I put Charolais bulls on them and got a second cross. See, every cross you make, supposedly you gain in milking ability and conception, stuff like that.
Did you ever run a dairy or
do the second cross? No.
Just strictly raise cattle.
Just
for
cattle.
Beef. For beef. Sell the calf crop, was that?
Sell the calf. That's basically what ranching is. It's not making money now.
What's the history of the Head of the River Ranch, and where is it located?
Well, it's 4 miles south of Cristol. It's the head of the South Concha. South Concha is your main source of water for San Angelo.
Are the springs actually there, or are they beyond
there? Right there at the house.
They're at the house.
Those are the head springs. And it's, they come out of this limestone formation. I've forgotten the name of the formation. Anyway, they're great big fissures in the limestone. I used to be able to watch the satellites in those springs that came out of the limestone. They'd come up about this high above the water.
Gee, that's what, 2 feet, 3 feet
yeah.
almost?
Great big spring.
Mm. Are they still there today? Or
yeah, they? Yeah, but they would come up.
They're about 8 or 10 inches now.
Yeah, about this high. But that's the ranch, about 4 miles south of Bristol.
Well, that was a great place to swim then, if they had that big pool of water that was coming out.
Well, right there at the ranch house, it's not over 30 feet wide. That's where it starts, you see. But it's a clear rock bottom, limestone, beautiful place. And then about a mile below or so, maybe 2 miles, there's a natural dam, just rock. It's just a natural dam. And the river there is maybe 150 feet wide. So it's beautiful. Well, it's like it is, Cristol, but it's wider there. And then it, at our north border, it's not too wide, but then you have a series of concrete dams between us and Cristol, and it gets to be wide, narrow and wide. Cristol, you've got this big dam, so on. But that water is always, my wife says it's always 70. I think it's much. I think it's colder than that. It's always the same temperature.
But did Mr. and Mrs. William Anson, were they the first landowners of that ranch, or were they people they buy from somebody?
Her father bought it from what they called the Veranda Cattle Company, in St. Louis, and they owned a lot of the land that either was adjacent to the Johnson family. It extended all back to San Angelo, and was still on the west of Long Island. Huge ranch. Our whole ranch, which is something like 10,000 acres, was one of their pastures. And Edie's father bought it from the Veranda Cattle Company back in 1904, I think.
Was he a cattle raiser, too?
Yeah, he came over from England with his brothers. Two brothers came over from England earlier than that, and established ranches. They bought them around Coles. And then Billy came over, the younger brother, and worked for them. And two or three or 4 years, something. Anyway, then he came up here and bought. But he was a great horseman. See, he played polo and bred polo ponies. He'd take him to New York to play up.
It seemed like people had no difficulty in those days traveling, even though we had dirt roads. And, did they use mostly the train?
Trains, yeah. In other words, he went to New York quite a bit, and he'd play with motorboat team, stuff like that. But he, yeah, they went on trains. Then around here, well, they had a train to Cristol, too, you see.
Yes, I remember that. 1929.
You could get around the hell a lot just on a train. And then you had your fast, what do you call those things? carriages and horses. Not that you would ride a horse in it, but I think you have these little, what do you call these, very lightweight things. And you have a fast horse.
Buggies or furries or...
Yeah. But I mean, they'll go like hell.
They're two-passenger vehicles, basically.
Yeah, they go like hell.
You could get on going up there.
Well, that was the advantage of life then. Back in around 1900, I'd say it was a good time to be here because a lot of people came from the east. This was sort of like a watering place, recreation. I mean, people came to get rid of TV also. So you had a lot of great families that came down here. A lot of people from England, Scotland and so on, they came here and had great parties and, great social life. Then they got on the trains and go around. And you know, the trains, just like great hotels, you know, Pullman, marvelous suffers. I remember coming, I was used to riding them. I'd give anything if I could get on the train instead of the plane. And if you had a good horse and these light, like you say, surreys, I'd like the way to live. And these little towns around here, much larger, much more active than now you see. They have a lot of grocery stores. They were self-contained because it took too long to come in there.
Well, I noticed all of them, according to the exhibition troupe stories, all of them have movie theaters. And, of course, most of those little towns don't have them now.
But, well, no, everyone comes in Angelo now and shops. But they didn't use to because everyone didn't have a nice little Saharan horse. And, Cristobal didn't have its train.
Did they still have wagon yards when you were growing up here?
Yes, I dimly remember a wagon yard. I used to live with my Uncle Charlie Hobbs over here on the tour. He ran the bank. And he still had his buggy. So he had two garages. He had one for his car and had another for his horses and stuff. And I still remember being driven around behind those horses and his on and his buggy. So it was just the last of that era that when I remember.
Growing up as a young person.
When I was about 6 years old, I guess. People were still going a little bit in their buggy. So on here. I know he was.
Some of the old pictures I've seen and some of the things I've read, like they take the, well, when y'all went to Kickapoo, for instance, there are about 24 cars from Menard brought the group back to San Angelo. Apparently, people were infatuated with automobiles in those days.
Yes, well, and the good thing then, you had maybe one car for five families. I mean, they didn't clutter the roads like this, so it was pleasant to drive.
But they get together in large groups of people. I'm amazed when I look at the figures of how many people participated in an activity back then. It just seemed like there were just, you know, 1,000 people seemed like a very common crowd for an event or something.
I think you had much more participation that way then because you didn't have TV and all that stuff.
You remember participating in any kite contests?
Anyone?
Kite contests. Flying kites.
Oh, kites?
Yeah.
No. I think no.
I know Neil Sanders, I read in the paper where he had a kite contest about 250 people were at.
He might have. He was pretty active in lots of stuff. No, I don't remember any kites. No, he would have made kites.
You received the Chase Holland Award when you were a kid. And I think the first time it was presented in 1927.
Yeah, I don't remember.
It was a coin about this big. And the a gold medal was presented to the outstanding scout, and then each outstanding scout of the troop received a silver coin or an award.
I read that here. I don't remember that at all.
You don't remember receiving that? It was at a summer court of honor when they always presented these. And you were the first one in Troop 3 to get the award.
It could have been. I don't remember.
Do you remember what a pan jam drum was?
No.
in an event they had during Scout Week during that time. Nobody seems to be able to remember that.
I don't remember
that.
Scout Week either.
They had store displays. Each troop put up a display, and they had a court of honor. And
I do remember, seems to me, some kind of store display that we would help make.
Either a model campsite or display of some sort
something
that we put
like
together.
That, yeah. I don't really remember.
You remember totem poles? They have what they call Her Majesty's Queen Totem and Her Majesty King Totem. And they presented them for the, Neil Sanders made them. And they presented them to the troop that had accumulated the most points between March and summer camp.
No, I don't remember any of that.
Don't remember any of that.
I do remember when we first went to scouting, we had our uniform pants went down and our stockings came up like this.
They were sort of modeled after the World War I Army uniform.
I think so. But that quickly went way below flesh, and we wore these little shorts. And that's all we ever wore, just short pants. I do remember these long.
They sort of buttoned together or tied together with a string, didn't they? Sort of gathered below the knee. And then
you went all the way down. They were long and fast, uncomfortable and all.
There was a kid by the name of Herbert Baldwin, and he came here from Shawnee, Oklahoma. He was an Eagle Scout when he came here, and he was active in Troop 3. Do you remember him? Remember anything about him? He was the first Eagle Scout. It was in San Angelo, but he didn't get his Eagle here. And he was active in 1926. They talked about him several times about
26.
When you first got in the troop, or right after you've been in the troop a while. Don't remember him or anything about him.
That's clear.
And you probably left before Scout Village. Do you remember them being a Scout Village on the river? The nights was over.
Where?
It was down. You know where the current Scout office is? You know where the B-25 bomber used to be?
Down
right below the YMCA, where they have those two baseball fields. It used to be a Scout Village, which was about, there were 11 buildings. Yeah. And each troop had their own building. And they all got washed away in the 1936 flood.
Yeah, no.
And the Knights of Zocca met in one, each troop.
Yeah. No, I don't remember.
You don't remember the video. You probably were not active in scouting then. That's one reason you didn't. Yeah, they said it was on the edge of town then. Because the roads, Randolph Street and 8th Street ended. There was no river drive or park drive along the river then.
No, there was none. Nearest one was Concha.
Those were all, actually the buildings were built in the floodplain, and that's one reason they got washed away.
Yeah. No, that was after I was out.
Do you remember Santa Fe Park when it first became a park?
Oh, sure. That's where I used to play golf.
Has it always been a golf course?
Oh.
Even when you were a kid?
That's where I was. Let's see. When I was seven, I remember playing golf there when I was seven.
It must have been a brand new park then. I can't remember. I remember reading about when it started, but I can't really remember when.
Well, I can't remember when it
But as long as you can remember, it was a park.
It's always been a park, so I remember.
Were you here
in the golf course, too.
They had a flood in 1930. Were you here then?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's for the 36 flood. It was in 1930.
Yeah, 30. Sure, 30, 32, I was in New Mexico. Must have been my last year here. We had several floods that came up.
Fill up the bottom land?
Yeah, pretty large floods.
Of course, the 36 one was the most damaging.
Well, I was up in Utah then.
That's what most people talk about, but I keep reading about these floods they had before then.
We had several pretty large floods. Not like the 36 at all, but the river would be way, I'd say 10.
Could y'all get across to go to school then, or you have
But I had a cousin who, when the flood would come, and one of the things they did then, they made their own little canoes out of canvas. I think Neil Sanders helped them.
They must have had tons of those canoes. So 30 or 40 of them would show up at camp in the summer.
Well, he'd get out in his canoe and get out in the flood,
Did you have a canoe?
No.
I guess the kids must have made them. They must have been canvas canoes.
They were simple things. I think Neil showed them how to make them, or even made some for them. They stretched the canvas. I remember them making them. And they put some kind of waterproof paint on them.
I got the impression, Neil Sanders, of course, was a cabinet maker. But in interviewing the other week, I got the impression that he was a woodworker. And anything had to do with woodworking, particularly in scouting, he seemed to enjoy. He made the bows. He had a Boy Scout archery club that he started.
Well, he was a great cabinet maker. He was very skilled. He made furniture.
He was a scoutmaster then.
I guess he was. I only remember Neil. He used to make our bows in his shop. But I remember Neil, and he was a good friend. I don't remember him really doing anything. He may have been.
He showed me a kite, a big signal kite, he called it. It was a box kite that he had made while he was in scouting.
Yeah.
And then he says the only two things he's got from scouting, he had 1 7-foot bow and the box kite, which he still has at his shop.
Well, I don't know whether you're interested in some of these names that I remember.
I am.
I'll just go with a fellow named, it isn't the scouts, but me, a fellow named Bomer Horton, Clovis Rogers, Harry Logan. He's not here now.
No, John Logan's his brother.
No.
Or Harry's. No relation.
You had John and Ralph. Ralph died. John's still living. Jake Wardlaw, he died. Charles Harris, he's still here. Luther Colton. Willie Crowley.
Willard just died about 5 or 6 weeks ago.
Did he?
Yeah. That's what Dwight told me.
Marshall Borders. Marshall was, he was the son of a bootlegger. He was an awfully nice fellow. Tootsie Borders. George Brockman, Sam Shuler, Fred Nibley.
Is Fred still alive?
I don't know.
George Brockman, of course, is down in Sonora.
Fred, last I heard, I think, his father was a doctor. Fred might have been a doctor.
Now, Sam Shuler, his dad was a commissioner. Wyrup was the president, and Youth was Schuber was the council commissioner.
Something like that.
And he used to be active in the scout camps.
Yeah, he was, darling. Not too much. You'd see him every so long. That was his father. Let's see. A fellow named Sonny Decker. Wright Jr. That's about, that's about all that I remember.
There seemed to be a group of y'all that were, the names came up real frequently, and apparently you were all active at the same time, or not only, I guess, in scouting, but run around together. Big thing, go to the movie together.
Pretty much. Uh-huh. Pretty much.
Were these kids all in the same class with you, or they were just varying degrees?
Well, within one or two, pretty much. Yeah, I'd say so. Like the Logans, Charles Harris, Crowdy, Coulter, Shuler, Brockman, Nibble. Pretty much all through the high school together. Bomer Horton. Yeah, pretty much.
And then when you moved away, you sort of lost touch with most of them.
Yeah. Uh-huh. See, because once, when I moved away in third, I went to New Mexico. Then for all practical purposes, I was gone. He came back 47.
Had San Angelo changed much?
Well, I would come back in the summers. Every so often I'd come back here and see. New Mexico, I'd come back, came back in the summers. MIT, I came back two summers. When I was in Utah, I would come down here and stay for Christmas, maybe. In the Army, I was overseas 4 to 5 years. So practically, I couldn't keep up. And in 47, when I came back, well, they were either all gone or didn't have too much in common.
Do you, when you look back upon scouting, do you have a good feeling about scouting?
Oh, sure. Oh, that's one of the best things I ever did, I'd say. Much better than, that was a good experience. High school was bad. Scouting good. Grade school wasn't bad. Your junior high is a tenant. It was, from then on through high school, it was just not good.
But in scouting, you could go camping and fishing and do play games and be with friends.
Well, it was a good, healthy thing to do. Nothing degenerate about scouting. The high school and all that element of being degenerate, that crept in. I didn't like it. Scouting was a good, healthy thing, and it took up all of our time. If we weren't scouts, I don't know what we would have been occupied. But, I can't think of anything better when you're that age, just to be occupied with something. A lot of our friends, you see, weren't scouts. I don't know what to tell you. Sat around for all I know. Well, say you were raised on a ranch. You had that. You were probably working on a ranch.
Had chores to do before and after school.
Let's say you were in town. If I was a doctor, I don't know. I'm not sure what to do.
They had a DeMolay group here in town. Did you ever become a member of it?
Yeah, for a short time. See, I went through the initiation with them. But,
they had a DeMolay band, did you?
Play? I was in that.
I was told they had a scout band here in 1922. And the man that was director of the DeMolay band had been director of that band. And I was told that a lot of the scouts in 22 and 23, when they got older, they became... It became the DeMolay band. It just sort of transferred from one group to the other.
Harold Broom was the bandmaster. And I don't know anything about the band, really. I just remember when I joined it, I was learning to play the trumpet. And so I joined the DeMolay band. I wasn't very good.
They played at every scout function.
I guess, well...
I could see many programmers that in the DeMolay band.
DeMolay band.